Hey, everybody, thank you so much.
I got it.
You tripped me up. I got this down to a science, and now I'm sitting with my wife. I'm spoiling the surprise, who I'm going to interview, and we're going to have a chat about business and entrepreneurship and pain and suffering and fights and dark times. And I couldn't even do my own intro because I'm staring at you, and we're laughing before I record this. So let me do it again. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining me on the Quick Talk podcast. I'm joined today by my wife, my high school sweetheart. She's as pretty today as she was then. Not even kidding. And I met her because my dirty old man football coach said, "Hey, Josh, that girl's kind of hot, man. I think you should go talk to her." And so I did. And I walked up to her locker the next day and did what we call the locker slam. You know, the whoosh, put my arm up on the wall and said, "Hey, how you doing?" And she looked at me like I was nuts. And that's kind of our beginning point. But then we've had this whole crazy life. We have four kids. First of all, thanks, Ash, for coming in here and doing this, because I made you do it. I told you people need to hear our story from your perspective. So thank you for coming in.
No problem. I would have to say that you have been asking me to do this for quite a few months now. And the reason I finally said yes is because I saw that Rhonda on Facebook had said that if she hears you say the word "man up" one more time, she might cry or scream. So I'm actually here for Rhonda. That's why I came in
Rhonda
today.
Rhonda Muncy, shout out. Shout out. We love you, Rhonda. Rhonda. Well, where should we start? I mean, I don't want to bore people. I feel like I have some good ideas on what to talk about, but shouldn't we give people maybe a little bit of background? We got married really young. We're 20. I was a pizza delivery driver. You worked at Hollywood Video.
Oh, my goodness.
Which is like a Blockbuster type store. They don't even exist anymore. And you would do so many DVD cases that you would have dreams that you were counting DVD cases. And we lived in a trailer park. It was a really nice trailer. And we loved it at the time, right? But we had no idea what the future was going to hold. What was it like, from your perspective, being married to me back in those days?
You know, I wasn't even thinking about talking about some of the stuff. I did tell you when I came in that I'm probably your most dangerous guest. And you said, "No, I don't have to publish this if not." but it's just because people want to know you best, probably, and the secrets of being married to an entrepreneur. But one thing I remember when we were in our trailer is that you had said, "You know, babe, if I can just figure out how to do this window cleaning stuff, I can do it." And I remember also you bought the window cleaning manual.
Yeah.
In the trailer.
Yes.
For like $100, and I wanted to punch you in the face.
Yeah.
I was like,
it was like $1 million.
We need to eat. Yeah. We need to eat. And you're like, "Man, someday I could make this book better." And you didn't even have a business yet. You just had this entrepreneur mind, and you were taking pictures of your equipment.
I was disappointed with the product. I bought this window cleaning, how to do a window cleaning business book product DVD thing. And it was total crap. And I didn't even know anything. I wanted to make the book before I even wanted to make the business.
I know. And that is kind of like the immaturity side of where we were at. And I remember also right after you bought the book and we went camping, and you read the book the entire time we were camping. And we were laying out in the freezing cold camping, because you shouldn't camp in Michigan in May.
We couldn't afford a camper. We only could afford a crappy tent.
And we probably borrowed it. I don't even know. But and you had these big visions and dreams. And I remember that you could do it then. I believed in you.
Oh. And you have always believed in me, to your own detriment many times. But it hasn't always been easy. But I'm just, you know, I feel really, really lucky because you tolerate my mind that doesn't shut off. And the people listening to this, so many of them are like I am. And they have ideas. They're an idea factory. There's always something. There's always something in their mind. I mean, you can't have a business and really effectively totally turn it off. It's really, really hard. I mean, you leave a 9-to-5 job, and you can just mentally and emotionally check out and you get in your car. And that's a huge benefit of a 9-to-5 job. I've never been able to do that very well. I don't think a lot of people can. Mm-hmm. Isn't that hard, you know, on a wife?
I would say so we were high school sweethearts. And so marrying an entrepreneur, even if your entrepreneur has a job now, there's definitely this entrepreneur spirit that I guess my recommendation would be is being married to an entrepreneur will change your life. It will be scary. It will be hard, but it will be worth it. Nobody in my family were entrepreneurs. This is like basically jumping out of an airplane to most people, like without a parachute or building a parachute on the way down. But it has definitely been hard, but worth it.
Well, you mentioned something this morning too about how you've always tried to give me permission to fail.
Yeah.
And that's huge because a lot of men are married, and they have a wife that beats them up, or they're, if they make one mistake or they try a business and it doesn't work, it's like, I told you this was going to happen. I told you. And what that can do is just absolutely devastate someone's dreams, their hopes. It can crush their whole world. And some people, you know, turn to alcohol or they get into other stuff. They disconnect. There's a lot of unfulfilled men walking around the world, is my point. And you've given me a huge gift by letting me go out there and get after it. Why'd you do that? Why are you like that?
I would say if someone wants to ruin a business, be a nagging spouse right there. You have to believe in your product. You have to, and if you don't believe in your product and you don't believe in your husband's business or your wife's business, you need to believe in them as a person because that is so huge.
It's huge.
It helps them get up in the morning. It helps them when they get beat up about things, it helps them focus on the future. It helps them believe in your family unit. It helps them go out there swinging. I don't know much about the sport of boxing, but I do know they have someone in their corner cheering them on. When they get beat up, they, you know, rub that Vaseline on their face or whatever that is. They give them water and they give them a pep talk to tell them to keep on fighting, to keep on swinging, to keep on keeping on.
Yeah, you got them right where you want them. This is yours. You're going to win.
Then they even give them like some encouragement or maybe telling them, oh, maybe you should do this better. And that's kind of what you get to do as a spouse. You get to, you know, encourage them of the things that they've done good. And you also get to say, hey, maybe you shouldn't have done this. Do this instead. They might not listen to your advice, but it's good to kind of have a say in that.
Right. And if there's a mistake made, and sometimes the mistakes are really, really significant. Like you don't have money, like your car gets repossessed, like you can't go on the vacation you thought you were going to go. You can't buy new school clothes for your kids. You know, some emotionally, you know, charged things can happen if we make a mistake in our business. But rather than attacking the man, the person, maybe you attack the idea or, hey, we did this wrong or what can we do? Let's pivot. Let's talk about that. It doesn't mean there's not stress. It doesn't mean me and you haven't fought tons of times about stuff. But the general tone in our marriage has always been you cheering me on, rooting for me, being my biggest fan. And it's the reason that all of this is working. It's the reason.
That's really sweet. I don't think that to be true.
It is true on a practical level because you can't operate at a high level. I can't come to work. And actually right now I'm working a lot and I have a lot of projects going on. And I can't function at a high level if I know that I don't have the support and permission from my wife to go after it and to go get it. Because there's seasons. And maybe this is a good transition point. There's seasons in a business. I don't mean like your cleaning business is seasonal. I mean during the life of any business, there's certain times where you have to sacrifice and certain times when you get to reap the reward. And it goes up and down and up and down. And we're kind of in a building phase right now with the software business and the other things I'm doing. But we've also had the reward. And the reason it's been able to work is because at the end of the day, even if we get in a fight, we always end up just like totally loving each other, being like, I'm sorry. And you're like, I'm sorry. And then we just kiss and stuff. Anyway, gosh. I don't know.
I think that's true. You do have to, as a spouse, you will have to take, sometimes you'll have to take a back seat on things, but you'll have to see the grand vision of where you're trying to go. And I think as an entrepreneur, you need to let your spouse in on that. If you always just take the reins and don't let them have a say, even if you override their say, right? You override your, you know, the entrepreneurs actually, but you have to bring your spouse along for the ride.
That's true.
Because they have to be on the same page as you and have the same vision. So I remember one time we had one car. We were down to one car. And the business needed another vehicle. It needed, your window cleaning business needed another vehicle. And I remember being a little like a sassy wife on you a little bit. And you had to rein me back in and say, okay, our goals are this. This truck is going to help us get to our goals. Yes, it's going to be tough on us. We're going to have one car for a little bit, but eventually you'll get a new car, and this is going to help pave the way for that. So I think, and you kind of have to bring it on in a little bit.
Communication. I don't think I did a great job of bringing you into the vision in the early days. I'm obsessed with it now. I want to construct a lifestyle for our family that works for us, because look, this podcast, my business, my boot camp, the software, I act silly, I have fun. I'm building these things to serve my family. That's the whole point. That's the point, but we get lost in it. And sometimes the business itself or the growth itself becomes the goal. It's not. We're supposed to use the business as a tool to do whatever we want to do with our life as people in our communities and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's talk about systems.
Oh, my goodness.
You hate the word system.
I hate the word
system. But you systems. Love systems. Like, you understand. But you the word makes you cringe for some reason.
Okay. Just so your viewers know, I hate clowns, but I hate the word systems almost as much as I hate the word clown. I hate clowns. I just dislike clowns. They terrify me. And systems terrify me, too. I think systems call for extreme action. I remember my husband saying once that everybody already has systems in their life, but a lot of them are broken or they don't serve us well. And so that has definitely like made me love systems more. I still dislike the word. So if someone could come up with a better word than the word system, I would love you forever. But I can remember a specific system. Do you want me to tell
system? No, this is great.
Okay. I remember when Josh first started his window cleaning company, we went down to Detroit Sponge. Am I allowed to say names like that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So we went down to Detroit Sponge, and we had gotten a box of these blue medical towels. I think it was like $100 a box. And I was like, we are not going to eat for a few weeks because we're buying these towels. And I remember the towels, I had a love-hate relationship with the towels. So if you've ever cleaned a blue cleaning towel, I know water-fed poles, you don't need as many blue towels now, but I imagine people still use them. The smell of those things are god-awful. It is the worst smell. And then when some people would have a dog and they'd clean tracks with the blue things, I'd have other people's dog hair in my washer. That is disgusting.
And then we'd leave them in our truck for a week to kind of just germinate for you.
Okay. So the blue towels, my love-hate relationship with the blue towels is this. Josh had a system for how he wanted them folded. And so every night after the kids would go to bed, I would fold these little blue towels in the perfect way. And sometimes I would be really angry and be like, oh, and I would, but then sometimes I would be so thankful for these blue towels. I would just think about every time I have to wash, I'm going to cry. I'm sorry. Every time I wash a blue towel, it means that there's food on my table. There's food on our employees' table. It has generated cash so that we can have a life, that we're building something together, that this is a part of it. This blue towel represents houses that we have serviced today. And I was in charge of cleaning the towels. And if they weren't clean in time, I heard about it. So finally, I would just get on top of it. But as we did more business, there was more towels to be cleaned. And I also had young children at the time, so I was doing laundry all the stinking time. And then we got another truck, and so we had these employees. Well, sometimes they wouldn't bring in the towels for me to wash, so I wouldn't have towels to wash. I thought they were good on towels. That would cause another fight. Then we'd get another truck. Well, then one person would be hoarding the towels, and the other person would be taking the towels. It was like a never-ending cycle with the towels. Yeah. And for some reason, it didn't go on the employees. It didn't go. It came back on me because I was in charge of the system for the towels.
Not to interrupt, but this is a good business teaching point, and it's the fact that if you over-systemize your business too early, you'll realize that you wasted your time, because as the business scales, the systems have to change all the time. And in this example, there needed to be accountability things and some protocols for the crews to have, you know, standards that were absolutely non-negotiable on what to do with these silly towels. Such a small thing, but it makes a bigger point, which is, you know, you have to adapt and keep revisiting your system. So in the beginning, it was just me cleaning. Our system was fine. You wash the towels, you fold them, I take them. And then when we bring more people into the equation, everything broke again, and it created stress and all that. And then, you know, we worked through it, obviously, as a simple example. But
and then I remember there was one employee that was good about bringing in the towels every day. And then the other employee would take the towels every day, but he never brought them back. And his would get a funk like you have never imagined. And I would just, like, look at him differently. Like, I think I was secretly judging him with my eyes because I was like, how dare you make my gag reflex? You know, and so, but here is where the system changed for me. It changed my marriage. I would say that this system alone changed my marriage and the business is when they finally got a storefront. They bought a washer and dryer, and I no longer was in charge of the system. And it was a sad moment and a happy moment because I didn't have to do the towels anymore. And now, instead of a little teeny laundry basket, they had garbage bins of dirty towels, clean towels. The system had been, you know, it was all, I don't even know, it had like writing on it of this is the system that you do with the towels. And I felt like, you know what, I used to be the gatekeeper of towels.
Right. You were the minimum viable system. And that's what we start with. We start with that and then it evolves into this whole behemoth. And it is a happy day because that meant our business was growing. And something as silly as that is representative of a bigger win for sure.
I remember I went to Birds Beware. I know this is too long on the towels, but I went to Birds Beware and I saw that someone had like left a towel somewhere and I was like, how dare you people? How dare you? Those are valuable. I folded those really well for so many years.
Yeah, we had like thousands of them at the end. I want to ask you, what are the top three best things about being married to an entrepreneur who, you know, his brain never stops? You know, someone like me, someone like our listeners. What are the best parts? Then we'll talk about the worst parts, but what are the best parts of it?
I would say the three best parts. I would say the first thing is that casting vision for our family. I had never been a part of something. You feel like you're a part of something. You cast vision on your life. You look at life differently when you're an entrepreneur. You look at people differently, and I think that would be number one.
Mm-hmm. The vision, the inspiration. I'm obviously that guy.
Yeah.
I try to, everything's epic to me. I think people listening, if anybody's like me, it's like, I see something, I'm like, oh my gosh, look at that tree, it's amazing. You know, everything is intense, you know, in good and bad. But
yes,
with the business, it's a constant revisiting the vision. You have to, and I got to be honest, with Birds Beware, the cleaning business, I could see it. I could see it built out. I could see it in my brain. I could see it was real to me. I could see it from the very, very beginning, literally in color. I could see it in detail, the office of the trucks and the office manager and the sales manager and then the sales teams and the operations manager and all these people and the general manager and, you know, dozens of techs. And I could see it. And for me, it was so real. It just it drove me nuts. I wanted to get it. And so it kind of bleeds out of you. Mm-hmm. And I think it can be inspiring when – we'll talk about the bad parts in a minute, but what's the second thing?
I would say the second thing goes with the first thing, and I would say impact. So the vision happens, and then you get to impact people's lives, and you get to change people's lives. You get to change your own life,
yes.
Which sometimes, and it gives you purpose. When I think of all the people's lives that we have got to know and love and be a part of, it changes everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were in your employees' weddings, and you know, we got to go to their kids' birthday parties, and it just starts to change things.
And there's so many stories. I was trying to think of some, I forget, and then you reminded me of a time we had bought a brand new employee a brand new pair of tennis shoes because he just didn't have any money. I forgot that there's hundreds of things that happen like that kind of over the years. Impact is huge. You can change someone's whole family tree by investing in them as a person and mm-hmm. just giving them hope, showing them that they're capable of things. That's the best part for me, is the impact.
Yeah, I would say impact is so huge. I remember just recently, I mean, this is such a little thing, and maybe there's a nugget out of here, I don't know, but I went to Goodwill. I love the Goodwill. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm going to love the Goodwill forever.
What?
And I ran into an old employee's wife, and their daughter was there. And I said, "Oh, happy birthday! I know your birthday was 2 days ago." And she said, "How did you?"
This is after we sold the business.
This was the business over two years ago. Yeah, this was this year. Mm-hmm. And she said, "How did you remember?" She goes, "You were always so good at remembering." And it wasn't that I was necessarily good at remembering. It's that I genuinely love these people, and they loved back. And some of them have. The sad part is that we grow up in a society where, you know, it's messed up, and some people are not being loved the right way. And we tried to love your employees well, and your customers, and different things like that, and it made a difference in their lives. They remember us as people who loved well, mm-hmm. and.
I think a lot of business owners miss this, though, because you can look at your business two ways. You can look at, you know, being this vision caster, leader, visionary guy who inspires and rallies a team behind you. That's what works, in my opinion. Or you can be the guy that's always looking to take. How can I make the fastest dollar for myself today? You never think long term. You don't think relationally. You don't actually care about your employees. You're just like continuously frustrated because maybe you never stopped and said, you know what? How can I help these employees get what they want? Because, you know, I don't know if it's Zig Ziglar, I think, that said it, Howard Partridge always says, the way to get what you want in life is to find a way to help all the people around you get what they want in life. You help other people get what they want, and you're going to get what you want by default. And we saw that in real life. But I also work with people that are super negative, and they don't realize they're negative. You know, they're just in a constant state of frustration. Maybe you should just take a step back and kind of look at these people. Remember, they're humans. They have fears and self-limiting beliefs, and they crawl out of bed and come to work for you for some reason. Let's find out what it is. Do they have credit card debt? Do they want to buy their first house? Are they stressed out with student loan debt? If they're having a bad week, do you just rip their head off, or do you figure out why? Maybe their dad has got cancer, and they don't tell you because you have no relationship with them. Just from a strictly financial business perspective, it's highly profitable to operate with that mentality.
Oh, I think exactly. I mean, I remember one day you had your first female employee, and she wanted to decorate her pole, and you were like...
Right, her window cleaning pole.
Yeah, she decorated like pink sparkles, and you were like, okay, sure, whatever. One day I was at Bath & Body Works, and I saw it was called A Beautiful Day, and I bought it for her. I don't know what inspired me to buy it for her, and I just said, I hope you have a beautiful day. She was so excited. She promoted the business. She told everybody about it. It was a $3.50 thing, maybe. Mm-hmm. And
but the reason it worked is because you didn't need something in return. It wasn't even in your mind. You were in a state of relational giving kind of mindset, and so you just loved on someone, and it can be huge to them.
And I'm not telling you to say that to pat myself on the back. I'm just telling you, like, she would work long hours, long nights for you. I mean, she would...
She was amazing.
She was amazing. And your employees... Same thing with your first employee that we, like, really invested in him and saw things in him. And he would work overtime for you. If someone messed up, he would be the first one to go fix it. Mm-hmm. He was on top of it. He believed in your vision because you believed in him.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it. And remember, everybody, that you're not building your company. You're not building your company. All of these people around you are who builds your company. You're the leader of it. If you want to scale and have a big business that you can walk away from, or you could, you know, automate, you have to have these people performing at a high level, and they're not going to if they're just a commodity, you know, dollar per hour, minimum wage mindset type of thing. They have to get caught up in the vision. So, okay, that we spent a lot of time there.
I know, sorry.
That was fun. No, it's okay. It's okay. Let's talk about two more things. Number one, what are the bad parts of being married to an entrepreneur? Because there are some. From your perspective, mm-hmm. what do you think?
Well, I would say I didn't really say my third good thing, which was freedom.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
No, let's do that.
My third thing was freedom. You have freedom in your time. When things start moving along, you have freedom in your finances to do things. You get to live out the life you want.
Yeah.
Now, I would say... That made me lead into my first bad thing is sometimes in the beginning, the finances are very stressful, very, very, very stressful. You know, the business in the beginning sometimes is a taker instead of a giver, and it takes, takes, and takes, and sometimes it takes, you know, a window gets broken, a screen gets broken, an employee does something unacceptable, and they don't show up to work, or
a customer doesn't pay you.
A customer leaves you a bad review on Angie's List or something, you know, and it's a taker, and that can be really stressful on your marriage, on your life.
Right. It's like feast or famine. Mm-hmm. You know, it's feast or famine, and the financial volatility can be crazy. It can paralyze you. But, you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel, but that definitely is a bad part of it.
And you know what? I think that's really why you have to have just hard work and perseverance. If you're in the beginning stages of your business, you need to hang on. Believe in yourself. Take a minute to regroup. I mean, bad circumstances are going to happen, but you cannot be a circumstantial person. You have to really think about the long haul of it all.
Mm-hmm.
You need to hang on. Yeah. That would be my best advice for someone is hang on. Hang on.
I don't know if I told you, Ashley, about this study. There's this book, and basically they're trying to figure out what is the common thread between all super ultra high achievers. Because some people that are ultra high, like Elon Musk, you know, people that change the world, that change industry. Some of them grow up in poverty. Some of them grow up with rich parents. Some of them go to Ivy League schools. Some of them didn't go to school. And so they really all come from different areas, but they found one common thread. This is a whole thing. There's research behind it. And the one factor that they found that is the most accurate determining factor of someone's future success is grit. Did we talk about that?
I don't know.
It's grit. That is the secret sauce to winning.
Oh,
so you
I
can have the
it.
Perfect system. You can be a finance expert. You can be a sales guy and be all slick and shooty and whatever. You could be, you know, inspirational. But the bottom line is you have to have grit. You have to keep going. And mm-hmm. that can be difficult.
Yeah. That for sure is difficult.
What's any other bad parts to being an entrepreneur other than the financial, you know, ups and downs?
I think number two would be stress. It can be very stressful. You're not just responsible. When your business starts to become bigger, it's not just your family, your children, your spouse. It is your employees, their families, your customers, your community. I mean, hopefully you're giving back to your community. If your business is thriving, you're giving back to your community, but you don't want to let anybody down.
Mm-hmm.
And when your circle starts to get bigger, you have more possibilities to let people down.
I'm kind of like a people pleaser in the sense that I don't like it when people don't like me.
Oh, I think everybody has a little bit of that.
Yeah,
no matter
like
what.
It drives me nuts because I'm like, wait, no, you just must not understand. I'm a super nice guy. Let's be better. Come on, let me make my case. Like, let's have a mock trial. Like, I can prove to you how nice I am. But when your business scales, it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great example because, you know, you get character assassinated by some lunatic customer and it's completely baseless and you're, oh my gosh, it ruined my whole day. I'm like, oh my gosh, this crap. Why would he say this?
And then come to find out you didn't even do work for them.
Yeah,
they just get confused, you know.
Yeah, that happens too. So stress is a very real part of being an entrepreneur.
And worry. Like some people they're investing so much in the future, right? They have this.
We live in the future.
We live in the future.
It's hard to be even present sometimes.
And we have some goals. I mean, 2017, people have goals. They've already met their goals. And so they're worrying about it. And if they don't hit their goals, they might battle depression and different things like that. They're risking a lot. And so they want to get rewarded with that. You know, there's going to be people out there right now that they're going to have to go tell their wives, hey, we're not going to get a car today. Or we're going to invest in the business, or we're going to buy another box of blue towels instead of buying groceries. I don't know what it is and where your circumstances is, but you're putting a lot of risk out there. And so you are probably worried or stressed. I know if you live in a colder state, you're worried right now. If you're a roof cleaner and you can't see dirty roofs right now, there's snow on them.
Yeah.
You know, you can't go clean windows right now because it's way below freezing. You know what I mean? Like, so there's a lot of worry and stress.
Well, and that kind of, I think, leads into your last bad point that you had talked about wanting to mention, which is uncertainty, right?
Yeah.
We literally, our life, I think we're acclimated to it now, because I've never had a job the entire time my kids have been born. I just realized that the other day, and I'm like, I've never had a job. They've never had a parent that's had, you know, a job. In the traditional sense at all. And I was like, that's awesome. I thought that was so cool. But in exchange for that,
it's a lot of uncertainty.
that's our life. It's total uncertainty.
I would say one thing that could be bad, and you just have to be, to be an entrepreneur or a spouse, you have to be, you have to have not only grit, but you have to have some boldness and some confidence in who you are. Because uncertainty is really scary, but if you let other people speak into your life that are not entrepreneurs.
Yeah, the non-qualified advisors is what they are.
Yes, they will freak you out of your uncertainty, because everybody in, right now in American society, it's not really, start a business. That's not what it is. It's go to college and work for somebody. That's what people are getting fed. And so if you don't have a 401k and you don't have health insurance like this, right, and you don't have your kids doing 45 after school activities, and you know, people don't, they have a impatient, I want things, I just get them, I believe them in my mind and I get them.
Well,
there's no hard work.
You're describing the current herd. That's the way. There's nothing wrong with people that want to do that. What I'm saying, though,
no,
is that culture is trending towards what you just described. I agree. And when you're an entrepreneur, you're going the other way. And so people notice it. And so even people that love you, like my family was super freaked out when I started my business. And there's a lot of negativity spoken into, get a job, why are you doing that? Well, oh gosh, Josh, why are you? They weren't meaning to be bad, but it's you need to really guard yourself against letting those words get into your ear hole, because it messes you up.
Yeah, and there is a lot of uncertainty, but if you let the lady in the grocery store tell you about who your identity is, or give, fan in fears of uncertainty and insecurity.
Oh, my brother-in-law had tried that business. Oh, that didn't work when he did it. Oh, what a disaster. It's like, boom, you're thinking that you're going to fail, and it's just baseless.
Yeah, it can really, fear and uncertainty, if you let the wrong people speak into your life, it can get out of control and you can self-destruct, mm-hmm, or you can help destruct your spouse.
Yeah, yeah. And I love Tony Robbins' quote. He says that the measure of success in your life is directly proportionate to the amount of uncertainty you're willing to live with. You have to live a big life. Not that everybody listening to this wants that, but we're just being authentic about who we are. You want to live a big life. You want to change your family tree, your community's family tree. You want to impact the world. You want to lead people. You want to be an influencer. I want that, okay? For me to do something that big, I'm forced to live a life of uncertainty all the time. Mm-hmm. In fact, when I get comfortable, I'm not growing. You can't really grow unless there's a little bit of pain and uncertainty. Mm-hmm. Do you agree?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think some of the best, well, when I look back on it, some of the best times in our life is when things were a little painful, and you come out on the other end of that so much stronger, and you have a boldness in you that, like, the things that we can take on today are so much bigger, mm-hmm, than the things, like, us as a team, yeah, we can take on bigger things because we've done hard things together. And so we also know that our family can, because when we were in Costa Rica, we had a lot of things come up against us that people don't really know about. And a lot of things come up against us, but we know who we are as a family, and it's really grounded us and rooted us. Sorry.
It's hard in the moment because you can't see the end of the story.
Yeah.
We all want, the whole idea of certainty is that you understand what's going to happen later. And so if you're an accountant at a Fortune 500 company and you have a lunchbox and you eat a peanut butter jelly sandwich with the crust cut off and you sit in your same desk and you do your accounting and you go home at 4:59, there's a level of certainty there because you can realistically project what your life is going to be like for the next 30 years. Mm-hmm. You can't do that when you try to be an entrepreneur. You know, you can make projections, but they're based on almost nothing, very little data. Things change so fast in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And so you gotta get in a groove and being comfortable being uncomfortable. It's really important. And then there's a statistic that I saw on a Facebook ad said that in 1950, 25% of Americans were business owners. It was normal. You know, that's just what you did. If you go back further in time, almost everybody was a business owner or an apprentice of a business owner, so that when they get bigger and older and mature, then they're the blacksmith, they're the tradesman, they're self-employed. Everyone was self-employed back in the day. And then in 2011, that number went from 25% down to like 11 point something percent. And then today it's down to 7.8%. Just in the last 5 years, it's went down even more.
That statistic is a shame, I think.
It's kind of terrifying.
It is terrifying. And it doesn't fuel people to believe in themselves. You know, like you said, the grit. Like, America was, I mean, I know not everybody that is your listeners live in the United States, but a lot of it was built on entrepreneurs. Like, they built
pioneers.
This country. Yeah, they pioneered it. They
normal average people don't get on a ship and sail for like 3 months or however long it takes to get over here, and then like walk into the forest with some supplies and like create a homestead.
No.
That's the definition of entrepreneur. So the people that were here were all like that. I mean, mm-hmm. huge, living in uncertainty and massive action and totally adventurous. And I think it's good for society. It's good for creativity. It's good for innovation, all that stuff. And there's just a lot of consolidation in business. And everything's becoming more and more big, big, big business. And the small businesses, if they're not happening, it worries me a little bit, because kids go to school, they're programmed, they're conditioned, get a good job, invest your 401k, die. Then your kid gets a good job, invest in a 401k, get a, you know, it's a cycle of almost like cattle.
What's funny is that in my job before I went to Costa Rica, before I retired, I don't know if I retired, I don't know if that's the right word, but I have met thousands and thousands of teenagers. I've taken them to camp. I've done all this stuff with a great youth organization called Young Life. And a lot of times when they're graduating high school, I say, oh, what are you going to do when you're done? And they'd say, I'm going to go to college. And I say, for what? And they said, oh, for business. And I said, you're going to go to college for business? Now, that's great. And I'm not saying that that's... But I said, well, why don't you just take that 30 grand you're going to spend a year for the next 4 years, which is like 120 grand, which a lot of business owners, I know you would be like, hey, I would love that right now. I would love that capital right
that
now.
That would be relatively helpful.
Yeah. And go do it. But I might fail. I think something that we have kind of knocked out in a society is people failing.
Yeah, we punish failure.
We punish failure, and so people get too nervous to fail. They get too nervous to try big things. They just want to stay with the norm, the herd of the cattle. They want to stay in the middle. They don't want to stand out.
Oh, it's so true. It reminds me of the monkey experiment, where they had these monkeys in a cage, and they had a pole in the middle of the cage, and there's a banana on top of the pole. And what they did was, every time a monkey climbed the pole to go get the banana, they would blast it down with a fire hose, which is totally cruel and like
horrifying.
Animal abuse. But the point of the story is really, really powerful. And so what happened was a monkey would go up and they'd hammer that sucker down. There's like 10 monkeys. And then after a while, all 10 of them had been punished for trying to get this banana, right? So they didn't try anymore. They they learned their lesson. They're like, no way. But then they started swapping out one monkey at a time with a new monkey who didn't know anything about the fire hose. And so that monkey would go in there, and when the new one's like, hey, a banana, he'd climb the pole. But guess what? They didn't use a fire hose. The other monkeys would grab the monkey and rip him down. That's almost like what you're describing.
Yeah.
Fear of what? No one even knows, right?
No.
Because they weren't the one that went through the Great Depression, like, or whatever the fear that, I don't know. But we're talking a long time. I want to wrap it up. I super appreciate you coming in here. The last thing I want to do is shamelessly use you to help me get people to check out my new boot camp. And you hear me talk about the boot camp. You saw me shoot all the videos. I worked for 6 months like a dog, creating all the content for the bootcamp, the trainings, the mind maps, the structure. How am I going to lay it out? How am I going to walk people through? How can I help them understand how to automate and grow a business that could be sold, a sellable business, all of those things and everything included in it. And I built this product, this course, this community. It's called the Automate, Grow, Sell Bootcamp. I think there's some confusion. Not everybody really knows what's in it. They know it costs a significant amount of money. It's not inexpensive, but it can change your life. And we've ran it for a year. And we're about to relaunch the new version, Bootcamp 2.0, on Thursday, January 12th. There'll be a webinar. And you know the bootcamp. You know people in the bootcamp. You're in the bootcamp private Facebook group. And you can see all the activity and the encouragement and the people helping each other and just the hope and the results. And what do you – and we did not discuss this before this, and I did that on purpose. What do you think about the bootcamp?
Well, the bootcamp at first was just an idea like other businesses in the past. But I would say I have been so blessed by the people in the boot camp and to hear their stories about how it has changed their lives, their families' lives, and their business. Today, I just heard a phone call that someone had left you and they had bought your boot camp and they had doubled their business in 1 year. Mm-hmm. That is amazing. And so, and I know what your spouses are going to say. When you want to buy the boot camp, your spouses are going to say, no, we want to eat.
Right, don't buy the blue towels.
That's exactly what I was going to say, is don't buy the blue towels. The blue towels might change your life. The boot camp might change your life. I hope it does change your life. Just like how we said that we loved our employees, we love and our customers for Birds Beware, we love the boot camp people. It has impacted us in such a great way that they have given us the honor to let them come into their business and their families and their homes and have give them inspire them.
Yeah, and it's a responsibility that I do not take lightly. You know, it puts a pressure on me. I want you to win. I want you to succeed. This is a long-term play. This isn't a meal that you buy and consume. This is a lifetime membership to a community of like-minded people that are trying to crush life. They're trying to get their business to serve them. I'm kind of the leader of that tribe, and I'm involved in investing in you, but it's more than that. It's more than me. It's about giving you the framework to win. Is there investment? Of course there's an investment. It's worth 5 times the price, okay? I unashamedly say that. And I would never lower the price too much because I want a particular caliber of person to be in there, and I want people that are committed. The boot camp is not my primary business. It's important to me. It's a lot of fun, but it's a artisan, little cultivated, small group. It's like a family. That's what I want it to become. That's the culture I want to create in the boot camp. So with all that being said, with my passionate sales pitch, unless you have something else you want to say.
Well, I have a few things I want to say. One thing is if you are thinking about the boot camp, I would get in now because you get this special mastermind group that I am a part of, and I don't really do much in there, but I get to read everybody's things, and it's very encouraging. These people, with the boot camp, you know, it is a little bit more expensive. Like, as a spouse, I would be like, but it is worth it. I think people are like-minded. They are go-getters. They're killing it. A lot of them are just killing it in there. And so I would just say the best time to get in would be now, because in the future, you won't have as probably much time and access with Josh and with all these other people, because these people are killing it. They're not going to be given advice forever, because I think they're just going to be, some people are going to be selling.
That's true. I mean, we had a guy this week join the boot camp that's a $1 million business, and there's other big ones in there. Because people that are high achievers understand to spend a little bit of investment money on your education to get a couple nuggets that can make you $50,000 this year, that just makes sense. Why beat yourself up for 2 years trying to figure out what I can teach you in 12 minutes? Or I can hop on one coaching call with you and give you the clarity that you've not been able to get because you're numb to your own situation. And as the boot camp does grow, the coaching calls will go away because I'm only one person and I can't talk to everybody.
Yeah.
But it's been a very intimate, very personal relationship with every single person so far, and the ones coming in this time where they got access to me directly. Yeah, and I'm just there to help and serve them. I think that's a huge, powerful benefit.
I think it would have been huge for you to be involved in something like this a long time ago, because we would have had to, we would have avoided a lot of pain and suffering.
Tons,
and failure.
Years.
You know what I mean? We just kind of bumbled around trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you could get in now, it would be so beneficial for you. So beneficial. And even if you can't afford the boot camp yet, I would definitely go on, sign up for your webinar just to get nuggets, inform yourself, eliminate pain in your life.
You know, I send a lot of free stuff out too. And the price of the bootcamp after this webinar is going to go way up. Okay. And for the webinar, it's going to be lower than it's posted for now. It's going to be like this little promo. You know, I want to grow it. January, this is the time. This is the time for most of us to do this. So I hope to see you there. Thank you for the long-winded, you know, time that you spent with us.
Yeah, you said.
I at least had tons of fun. I hope you did.
Yeah, you said 20 minutes. It's like an hour.
Yeah, I was like, we got to keep this short. You know, I don't want it to be too crazy. But you know what? It was perfect.
And here's my last thing. If you enjoyed hanging out with me, because I enjoyed hanging out with you, friends, it was fun. I was so nervous that I could have thrown up before, but now I just want to talk forever to you. But like my podcast on Facebook, because then if you like it, maybe other friends will see it, and then you can do a question and answer, and Josh will have me come back.
Oh, I see. You're trying to weasel into being a recurring guest. I gotcha. Hey, tell them about your blog.
Oh, goodness. I haven't done anything on my blog
for
a long time.
I know, but there's a lot of cool stuff on there.
If you go to the Latimer Leap, .com. We do have, is it .com?
Yeah.
The LatimerLeap.com. We have our blog that we kind of wrote about, and you know, I haven't published it yet, but my husband even systemized my postpartum depression. Yeah, that's what we do, is we systemize things in our family. But So, yeah, check out my blog, I guess. Yeah,
thelatimerleap.com. It's good. People love it. I mean, you've had massive emails from strangers all over the world.
All over the world. On my postpartum depression one, the snow globe, doctors now share that with postpartum clients that they have. Like,
amazing.
And they give it to their husbands to understand what postpartum depression is and stuff. So, yeah. Cool. So, thanks for having me.
Love you.
Oh, you're so cheesy. I love you too.
Hey, thanks for hanging out, friends. And from all of us here at the Quick Talk Podcast team, we hope you love today's show. We hope that you were inspired to become a doer and not just a listener. Apply what you've heard today in your own business and watch things change for the better. Lastly, remember that all the money in the world can't save your soul. Seek first the kingdom of God, my friends. We'll see you next time.
For more information about the Quick Talk Podcast or Joshua's other businesses, visit our website, quicktalkpodcast.com. Have a blessed day.